The following content has been provided by New St. Andrews College in Moscow, Idaho. For more information, visit us online at www.nsa.edu.
Welcome to the studio, and by studio we mean the car parked up behind Goodwill. We had to run in there first with our coffees and chit chat about nothing much. I'm Rachel Jankovic. This is my sister.
I'm Becca Merkel.
Yes, and we are here to talk about, as I said, nothing much, but just the things that keep our minds occupied as we work through just the here and now of our everyday lives.
Basically, this is what we talk about on the phone.
Wow. Typically, but we have been hounded and nagged to do a podcast.
So we're doing it in the car this time, face to face.
Yeah, we're gonna try it. And we're even gonna try to control our subject matter a little more than we do when we just talk
on the phone.
Amongst
ourselves.
And we'll
also try to not say, sorry, I gotta go, and hang up abruptly.
Yeah, we'll try not to, but we might. So today's topic. Becca, what would you like to share with us? I can't remember what we said we would talk about.
Oh, no, we were going to talk about what we have been
working on. What's on your mind?
About just in the day-to-day, the sort of...
What have you been busy with this week? Well, we just came off of Christmas.
Yeah, so that was busy times.
We've all been just thinking mostly about Christmas right now. So now it's the kind of the new year, new look at a new year. What are you thinking about?
Working on. Practical stuff. I am mudding a bedroom, so that's what I am spending my
Deep theological thoughts.
No, we're not talking about that yet.
About mudding your bedroom and how it brings you closer to God.
It's not my bedroom anyway.
It's my
girl's bedroom, and it was this horrible den of iniquity before when we moved into the house, and it was like this really terrible green carpet and this really depraved wallpaper on the ceiling. Like,
what I remember most about it
on the ceiling
was that it seemed as though the wallpaper was what was holding the ceiling on.
It looked
because
like
it
that.
Sagged down. Mm-hmm. Everything sloped down to the
point.
Light fixture.
Yeah,
as though the light fixture was
like
kind
the
of
inverted
the
cherry on top. Yeah.
Yeah, but like the light fixture was the drain for whatever was happening in the ceiling. Didn't you find something under there when you did that?
Wasn't it was totally solid. It was just not very flat. Anyway, so we took out some of the bad fake wood paneling in the upstairs and things, and then re-sheetrocked. And I am the mudder taper person, so I have been
Becca is the
around.
She is the ultimate in optimistic renovators.
Optimistic is my
the
besetting
word.
Sin.
It is. I've long joked with Becca that if she could make a pair of shoes, she would.
I would.
And she often does believe she could make a pair of shoes.
Well,
she's like, I'm basically there.
No,
I basically
the thing.
Know what I
it's
need to know.
It's a thing that humans can make. I am a human. I don't
Therefore,
anyway,
watch me go.
We know that it's people
happening.
Do this thing. It's
someday,
well recognized.
Someday I expect her to come out with a pair of home crafted shoes. And I hope that people will say to her, did you make those yourself?
No.
The ultimate
no.
compliment
Here's
in a high
problem.
Heel.
I have never tried it.
Because it would be, no, hot
I
tip.
I wouldn't.
You're thinking, yeah, maybe you could make something like a Tom's at home, but you don't know Becca if you think that that's what she has
no.
in mind. What
I don't
she
want
has
a moccasin.
In no.
Nobody wants a moccasin.
What she has in mind is some kind of a high fashion heel. So
3D printers.
Probably 3D. Yeah. For 3-inch at least.
Anyway,
heels.
That's not the point. I don't want to make shoes. Don't listen to her. Nobody thinks I want to do that.
Everybody.
I've just been...
Everybody thinks that you do want to do
I've
that.
I've just been mudding a bedroom. That's all I want is some nice, crisp corners and flat walls so that we can paint and move my girls in. And so that's kind of been my battle that I've been fighting. After I get home, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to stand on a chair again and put some mud on the wall.
Yeah. Good.
How about you? What have you been doing?
Mostly. Yesterday, I spent the day, it felt like, reflecting on how I don't get out in the winter much because someone has to stay home and match socks. Like, otherwise,
valid.
It is a full-time effort. And the thing is, there are a lot of things to think about with this. It's winter, like cold here, snow, lots happening. So it's not, socks are not optional. No. So it actually does, it's a dramatic seasonal change in the laundry that there are so many socks. And
plus
filter to the bottom of the laundry hamper.
The snow comes in the house and you step in it in your socks.
Wet socks. And then you take them off. And then you start over. And I have 7 kids and then plus us. So 9 people. So that's 18 socks a day at a minimum. But the reality is probably more like 49 socks a day are used. And so then they filter to the bottom of the hamper. As I always, the hamper, by that I mean my enormous fiber drum that's huge. Like my husband and I both could probably get in it and hide. And he's not small. He's 6'6", so it's big. Anyways, as I sift through, you know, for like I'm going to do a load of jeans, I think as you toss, the more you toss the laundry, the more the socks get to the bottom.
But here's the thing. I'm going to interject that I have started separating the socks out and doing a load of only socks, and I love this technique. Or socks and skivvies, but just like it's just all socks because then you
whenever
throw it all
I end
in,
up with an all socks load, I also wash it hot with OxyClean and it makes me feel
and
really
it's
happy.
Great. And then you can just sit there with one pile instead of having it like
stuck up
inside a sweatpant leg. Or...
Yeah, but that's the problem with wearing sweatpants and should just stay off
nobody
of those.
Should.
But I had a few loads because of Christmas. I had a few loads of laundry that I got through but not folded, and so then
that's
it was just like. Like this mystery
just
tour of lost socks.
Just put it back in the wash at that point.
So I pressed through that yesterday and I matched billions of socks. And as I was doing it, I was reflecting on how it used to really be a problem that my kids were taking socks off and leaving them all over the place. Like they'd come in the house and peel their socks off for no good reason, leave them, and then start fresh
or
with a new
car.
Batch.
Our kids always do
but
it
But I
in
think
the car.
Because I'm still adjusting to the winter, I realize that the socks have not been bountiful enough that the kids are like, if you found a pair, you hang on to those things all day. Because there might not be another pair of smart wools coming your way for a few days. So hold on to them and don't take it for granted. And definitely don't take them off and leave them behind the couch. Actually, maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe they do that to hide them for later.
Could be.
Maybe I could see this could as be. A compliment to myself.
Anyway, so that's been your battle. The socks.
Well, laundry is an ongoing battle for me, but it's not. A while ago, I had a real change of... I realized that I was like, I'm going to have laundry my whole life, and I'm done with being dramatic about it. Like, this is just a fact of life, and I'm done with the, like, oh, my word, I have so much laundry, or oh, my word, it's killing me with the laundry, or how am I going to deal with this? Like, this is just life. It's not...
No, see, I had this moment where I realized... For a long time, I think I wanted to just get caught up on the laundry and then be done. Like... I have done the laundry, I'm caught up, but it's no time before...
Kind of like I'm just going to take 7 more breaths and then wrap it up for the day.
Or, I mean, I realize it's more like eating, where you're going to have to... You feed people now, but you're going to have to do it again in a couple hours because they're going to get hungry again. And I think I just kept wanting the laundry to be one of those tasks that you could... just rest on your laurels for a while
are some moments with the laundry. Like, if you were to wash the shower curtain, you could then rest on your laurels for a minute. Someone would blob a toothpaste on
Speaking
it the day
of. Which, I have to wash my shower curtain.
Yeah, it's bad when you find out... When you actually
been
look,
using it as a
when
hand
you actually
towel.
Look, and you're like, "Oh no, what happened? Something dark happened here."
Yes, yeah.
So
yes, indeed.
That's what I've been working on:
socks, mudding the walls. You can see we live glamorous lives here.
We do. Super.
We punctuate it with trips to Goodwill. Really quick.
Glamour
Coffee.
Time. So, what is the next thing we're going to talk about?
We did talk about it. More sort of theological.
You said you made fun of me for saying that you were having theological reflections about mudding.
Well, I might when I'm in there muddying, but I can't think of what
they Not are. Off the top of your
Not
head.
Not off the top of my head. I haven't come out with any great spiritual lessons.
Hasn't really been a spiritual discipline.
Except for that I have realized that I kind of dread muddying because it's just like, it's heavy work and I don't like, it makes a mess and, you know, you have to sand it and then the dust gets everywhere and the ceilings are the worst because it hurts your neck so much. But I actually adore it. When I get in there and I start doing it, it's just really fun to make it smooth, you know, to like take a bad looking, well, I'm not disparaging the sheetrock job, but you know, it's got its
the also homemade sheetrock job.
It's got its glitches here and there, but to take something that like looks pretty dark and then turn it into like a really flat wall.
Satisfying.
It's really satisfying. It really is. And that is something you can rest on your laurels because once you've mudded the wall, you don't have to do it again tomorrow.
Yeah, I have a...
Well, I do because I'm only on the first coat, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I have a room. We live in a very 60s house. It's just super practical. We bought it because we were in a phase of life when practical sounded like the ultimate ideal.
That's because you're more mature than us.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
What is it?
I'm getting a phone call.
The studio line is ringing.
Anyway.
Hey, Mom.
Anyway, so you have a very practical 60s house because much more mature about it. We have an 1890 uber unpractical
house. We were in a phase where what sounded best was survivable. We're busy life. So anyways, we have the 60s house and the people before us built a wine cellar in the basement. So there's a number of ambiguously intended rooms in this house. And there's one that is the playroom. And then right off of that is this wine cellar. And it is, I don't know how, it's probably maybe 10 by 10. Do you think? No, smaller than that. 8 by 8. I don't know. It's a little wine cellar. And it has a... those big diagonal shelves up top. So we like wine fine, but not to that level. Not to the laying up a whole storehouse of wine. But what we do have a whole storehouse of is fabric and yarn goods. So we call it the yarn cellar at my house. And I have 4 daughters who also knit and crochet and do random things. And so last night I waded into there and I cleaned it out. And all of the snaggle projects that were despaired of by someone.
Yeah.
I don't even know who. With 4 girls doing it, lots can happen down there. So I finally got that all in order and my plan is now I got my knitting basket all cleaned out. Things in order to work through. Like this is what I'm going to finish first and then second and then what I'm working on. I don't know why I brought that up though.
Me neither.
Things I was working on.
But how about things you're sort of reflecting on?
Well, that's why I thought of the yarn thing is that knitting is something that I love to do that is like a way that I enjoy a little bit of peace. Like it's something that's really you can finish something and be done with it. And it's different. It's just a different kind of work and it's an ongoing work, but then you finish it. But the thing is funny for me is that it was like a coping mechanism when my kids were littler. And now it's funny, it's harder and harder for me to do it, but it's because it's multiplying. Because all of my daughters now, if I sit down to knit, everyone goes to get their knitting and then they need me to cast on or explain explain a pattern or untangle a mess they made or fix something. And it's funny how it is. It's something that I'm losing some of my time to just sit and do it for me. But at the same time, in a few more years, that will be a very different kind of a harvest where you have all of these friends doing it with you. But right now, it's like I think that happens with lots of things. The phase of cooking for your family where nobody's really enjoying it.
where you have to force them to eat.
Right. And even for your husband, it's not relaxing to sit down at a table with a bunch of kids who are not. You know, you have to work through that period of like, no, this is what we do. This is how we share table fellowship.
Yeah.
This is, you know, laying the groundwork to have a fun time with those people later.
Yeah.
You're a little bit later on with
those
things. Yeah,
we're in a bigger, we've got bigger kids. So I have 5 kids. They're basically all teens. My youngest is 12, but basically all in the teen years. So yeah, we don't have to force anybody to eat anything. We're in a really fun phase where they all come in and help cook in the kitchen. And we've got some adventurous eaters out there. And
yeah,
you know, they enjoy it when I, yeah, you totally do. But I mean, they enjoy it when I try new stuff and, you know, it's great. They're huge.
Youngest son and my oldest daughter had the same due date. So
yeah, I handed the baton.
Yeah. So she's got the, her youngest is 12 and my oldest is 12 and my youngest is 1.
Yeah. So you're in a very different phase still. I've got 5 big kids and 5 big busy kids, but it's a totally, it keeps getting funner. It really does.
Yeah, it is.
But no, we were talking earlier though about lurching, changing the subject. We were talking about,
it's what we do best.
About policing your own attitudes.
Oh, when we were actually on the phone.
When we were actually on the phone earlier today while I was cleaning out my bedroom and starting to sort laundry. Socks all into one pile.
Don't brag.
Anyways, no, I haven't gotten there yet. I was just going to.
Good intentions.
When I get home, I'm going to put in my socks and then I'm going to go mud. Anyways, we were talking about the things that we tolerate in our own little fussy attitudes. When we get discontent or we start getting chippy about the house or everything's so messy or I can't believe whatever, all those kinds of little gungy attitudes. Mm-hmm. Learning to throw a penalty flag on yourself.
Oh, yes.
Before it comes out your mouth.
Well, I'm going to say, I am going to interject something about this, which is that we have a big, if you're actually hearing this, you probably know our family, but we have a big family. We have Becca and I have one brother who also has 5 kids. We all live in the same town. So there's 17
with our parents.
Cousins. Our parents live here. We eat a Sabbath dinner together.
And all of us have the other side of the families in town too.
Not all of them, but some members of it. Yeah. So we have lots of family. We get together for a Sabbath dinner every Saturday night. And actually, it's typically at my mom's house. And we eat a big, you know, Lord's Day kickoff meal together, basically. Something that I think Christians commonly, we have just been put in a really blessed place that our parents laid a lot of foundations for us that we are not really responsible for, but the older I get, the older I get, the more thankful I am for those foundations, the more I start to notice them. You know, things that you just always assumed, and then you're like, oh, wow, this is not an this is not something that is really common. One of those things is that we get together as a big group, and we are all in fellowship.
Yeah.
And that we have all been in fellowship for years. It's not, you know, that the kids have grown up being in fellowship, but this is tying it back to the penalty flag thing, is that I think that the primary reason that we have such a big group of people who get along and are in fellowship is having a very high standard for self-policing your attitudes.
Well, because the reason you fall out of fellowship with another person is because you fell out of fellowship with God first. And that happens in your own little heart.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like as you start planting little seeds of bitterness about someone or envy or I'm just can't believe she's that selfish or why aren't people more enthusiastic about this item I brought to feed them this time or how any of those things, it's not really a dispute with the other person. It's a dispute between yourself and, you know, anyways, one of the biggest things I think that I am so thankful for is that we have, that work of policing your own attitude actually yields incredible fruit in your relationships with other people.
Oh, so true. And it's something that we work on with our kids too, because from the time they were little, you don't tolerate somebody just getting into a little black rain cloud and staying there. Like, as soon as somebody is in that, you know, with your kids when they're small, that's what it's drop everything and fix that first. And that means that mom has to drop everything and help that kid get out of whatever little slough of despond they're in. And what you're doing is you're teaching them how to do it themselves. It's like the training wheels. And later those training wheels will come off.
Right.
And but they need to learn how to not tolerate the little attitudes, the little petty discontents and resentments and comparisons. And
well, this is something that I think growing up, our dad always would say, he said so many times, the difference between a clean house and a dirty house is not how many things are dropped. It's how many things are picked up. It's like, how often is it cleaned? How often is whatever? And the reality is that some things, when they get dropped on the floor in a heavy traffic area, are just, it is like you do, like Becca was saying, you stop everything to pick it up. Because right. I think, I especially think a mom's bad attitude is like dropping a glass jar full of honey in the entryway of a high traffic home. It is like, yep. Everyone, please track this everywhere.
Right.
Get your feet cut with the glass.
Right.
Then, you know, then that way you can immediately have six children weeping in different areas of the house, having tracked honey everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Because a mom's attitude goes.
And I would say
so
a dad's too, but
wide.
I talk to moms.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
not, it's, I'm
yeah.
not, I'm not saying that because the dad's irrelevant, but the mom at home with the kids, your attitude is just,
it's huge.
Amazing.
It's really huge.
And this is something
And the thing is, the kids will imitate you. And when moms have a different standard for the kids than they have for themselves, we know which one will stick. And that is the kids
it's
will
It's a lowest
imitate
common
that.
Denominator situation because it does, all it will do is fuel additional, like how often have you had a discontent attitude? Some kind of like, I can't believe I have to do this again. I can't believe this is this, you know, whatever, some level of discontent. And then you ask a kid, like, go put this in the laundry. And they're like, ah, I just went to the laundry room. And you're like, you cannot have that kind of a bad attitude. Like, let me rebuke you. But it's just a terrible, like, fruitless thing. Unless you're monitoring your own attitude to the level that you say, oh, you're right. I'm having a bad attitude. Lord, forgive me for this attitude. Like, let's move on now.
Yeah. And then apologize to anybody who heard you or witnessed you doing it. And
yeah, but I was going to say, tying this into, it's not a weirdly irrelevant, overly pietistic thing to say you should be policing your own attitude.
No.
Like, it's where the whole game is, because it is where the whole game is. Like, I feel like the reason I brought that up with the broader family is that all the time we're all being annoying. Like, we're not in fellowship because no one is being human or no one is being annoying or no one is ever being selfish or no one is ever. I think the reason that we're in fellowship is because everyone is committed to dealing with that on their own end.
Yeah.
Right? So it's never like someone could actually be in a selfish mood and come to a Sabbath dinner feeling grumpy. I don't know, because I can't think of that happening. I'm trying to think about a kid. No, I just think, of course, it's happened that someone has been there sometimes struggling with something.
But not that we've ever all been like noticing looking at each other meaningfully
Sometimes there might be a little bit of like stress or I would say fragility when someone is kind of, for whatever reason, maybe kind of feeling a little,
I don't know.
We used to joke about it being that it was like we all belly flop at the Sabbath.
Do.
We like
we
sprint the whole week and then come screaming into Sabbath at 6 o'clock and crash. Like, we're like, we made it. We made it to the Lord's Day. We like belly flop into mom's house. It's great. But I guess what I was trying to say is that I think the reason it's not that people aren't being annoying or aren't being human. It's just that people actually can live in fellowship with each other in spite of
the
normal
love covering a multitude of sins. The only way that can happen is if you are in fellowship yourself. Like, if your heart is good and you haven't been tolerating sin in yourself, then you can actually tolerate in others. It's when you tolerate in it in yourself, then suddenly you can't tolerate anyone else. It turns you into a Pharisee.
It is so true. So true. That you're like, how dare you all not be thinking of me first? How dare you? And but yeah, it's like,
always good when you're going around applying the golden rule and to everyone else.
The world is always good. I was just going to say, the world is so full of all this advice and counsel on how to love and accept yourself with all of your failings.
we don't actually struggle with that.
Oh, look how cute those quail are.
I know. I was just watching them. They're really cute.
Oh, very cute.
In the snow.
In the snow. I think it's amazing how quail make snow look cozy.
I know they do.
They're just, it's true. They get under the bushes and you think like, ooh, that'd be a great snuggly spot. All right. Anyways, the world is so full of all this talk about how to accept yourself and love yourself and do all of this. And it's like, well, the reality is that you don't actually need to do that. Like,
well, and the scripture directly contradicts that when it says, no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it. And it's like,
everyone's super precious about themselves.
Yeah. And,
but I think it's the fact that people are so concerned about that, like they have to be accepted, that you're like overlooking the fact that Christ loves you and that your job is loving others, is passing the love that Christ gave to you onto the people around you instead of being like judgy McJudgy pants about everybody else
doing it to you.
Yeah, while really trying to honor yourself for your weakness.
Yeah.
Like you see these things about, I am authentic because of my bad attitude. I am special and authentic, but their bad attitude is just unseemly.
Yeah, exactly.
Just unseemly. Yeah.
And lots of times it's good to like step out of the frame for a second and just look at yourself and say, okay, if I was to take that attitude, that set of grievances, and put it in someone else, how would I feel about them?
Oh, we'd be so quick for the solutions.
Yeah, well, but like, even
well,
like,
you just need to repent.
Well, just a parallel example, like, how would you feel if your husband was being as fussy as you are being right now? You know, like, it actually, we don't love it when we see it in others, and it's good to recognize that sometimes.
Not our fave. And I think women especially stumble into the critical, being just the critical spirit, but are not great receivers of the critical spirit.
No, that's like, true.
Someone was like, oh, I just don't really like the way you look right now. You'd be like, how dare he? How dare he say this? But yeah, women.
Anyway, so how about what's your favorite author or book?
Oh man, favorite author. That's
something
rough.
That people should immediately read.
Let's not say favorite, because then I have that's too hard. Let's
something that everyone should have read and appreciated.
Peace Like a River by Leif Anger is spectacular. Like, if you have not read it, you should read it.
I haven't read it.
Is really.
Mm-mm.
Get on that.
It's at my house, but it actually doesn't appeal to me. Like, I look at it and I think, do I want to read it?
Yeah,
not really.
You know what shocked me about it is that I think I was like 3 pages into it and I was like, how can I care about these characters as much? Like, it was so well done that you barely know them and you care. Like,
is it poignant though? See, I don't love feeling like I'm being emotionally manipulated.
Not manipulated. But it is beautiful. It is really wonderful. And it is, everybody that I've gotten to read it so far has been like, oh my word.
No, I've heard nothing but good things about it. I think I'm just not ready. Am I gonna cry? I never feel like what I'd love to do is sit down and have a good cry at something. I don't want to.
I think I probably got choked up, but it's not like something that it's worth it. Okay. You should read it.
I'll have to think about that.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. I'm always down for a good Woodhouse.
She's been down for a good Woodhouse since probably I was 8 and you were 12, right? Because Nate and I used to be like, let's play outside. And she's like, I'm just going to finish this chapter. And we'd be like, how many pages is left? And be like, 2 pages. Okay. And then we'd get distracted. Then we'd come back in and be like, are you done with that chapter yet? And she's like, oh no, just a few more pages. And we would like look again and we'd be like, how does she have more pages? But she kept starting the next chapter and always having just a few pages left.
I think this sounds like bitterness.
It is, actually. I think we might need to go back to this forgive much.
I'm not forgiving this yet.
No, but the thing is, the Woodhouse, the reason I like Woodhouse is because I like reading an author that I can appreciate the writing itself. Like, the writing itself is so funny with him. And it's funny. Just surprising.
Like, that's the thing, though, that's what I meant about Peace Like a River, is that there's the story, which is great. But there's the writing, which is amazingly powerful, because you don't know how he got you to feel that way.
Yeah, that's true. I just like, and that's different, though.
Woodhouse is like snorting out loud and filing things away.
Woodhouse doesn't do like deep character development. It's all about the metaphors and the hilarious turns of phrases and the vocab.
Okay, so favorite off the top of your head, favorite Woodhouse metaphors.
Favorite Woodhouse.
I always remember the one that was, her face shone like the seat of a bus driver's trousers.
It is good. It is just
and
good.
Or like he was quaking like a jelly in the high wind.
You see, it's just glorious. It's such a good
Come
guy.
On, I'm sure you've got one in there.
Doesn't he have a line about her laugh was like, sounded like a troop of cavalry riding over a tin bridge.
So good.
I know. And it's just my favorite one. I can't help but just leave it to Smith. P. Smith. Yeah. Like P-S-M-I-T-H.
Yeah, that's a great one.
The P is silent.
Woodhouse is like an embedded, it's like a note in a chord of our life. That Woodhouse, our dad loved Woodhouse, our grandparents loved Woodhouse, we grew up on Woodhouse, now our children. I still remember my oldest daughter read her first one not very long ago, and she was just like cracking up over and over. It's just brilliant. Really good. So leave it to Smith is your recommend. Peace Like a River is mine.
Peace Like a River is yours.
And then of course my recommend is that you join us for our In the Car podcast.
Actually, this is a good view. We're looking out over the town. It's like a gorgeous sunny day.
We can see
the
state of the roof of Goodwill right here, because it's a very hilly area. So
we're looking out over the top.
Look it out. I'm starting the car because it's getting cold.
All right. We're done with our coffee.
Yes. Thanks for coming.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
New St. Andrews College, thanks you for listening.